Hello there, my name is John Caruso and welcome to our podcast, Everyone Has a Story, the companion podcast to the quarterly lifestyle magazines, Hello Sunshine Magazine and In Noosa Magazine, with a cumulative quarterly distribution of over 35,000 magazines. It's all about connecting community through storytelling, and we've been introducing you to some standout locals amongst our community for a number of years now here on the podcast. And if you'd like your brand, your business to be part of our publications, Hello Sunshine or In Noosa Magazine, reach out on social media. We're on Facebook and we're on Instagram, and one of our client services manager will contact you. Okay, on to our podcast for today. This bloke, hot on the heels of the Tony Kelly podcast from a couple of weeks ago, this bloke is such a great, interesting chat. He may be familiar to many locals. He's been around the hospitality game and the local business for a long time. Dimmy, he's known as Dimmy around Maroochydore, Dimitri Limnatidis. He's from Cyprus. I never knew his origins. He came out with his family many years ago after his compulsory military service. And the thing about Dimmy when I recorded this podcast, and the thing hopefully you get out of listening to this podcast, is that when Dimmy gets knocked down, he just keeps on getting back up. Everyone has a story, and today I'd like you to meet Dimitri Limnatidis. Always seem like a man that's wheeling and dealing with a lot of balls in the air.
Yeah.
If you meet someone for the first time, Dimmy, and they say, "Dim, what do you do? What do you do for a living? What do you tell them?"
I actually confuse myself. Look, what I have done, what I do. It's right now. I'm just managing in a venue because it's not a big deal to me, I suppose. And more likely, I would say, I just do the Diablo ginger beer. I don't get into too many details. It's not a, yeah.
Because your history, I mean, I don't think you and I've known of each other, but I've never sat down and had a chat with you. I know you've worked with my wife Deb before from, I think, Ocean Street. Yes. I knew that you came when I was managing the ABC. You came in a few times and yes. had a chat with a bloke called Rob Blackmore.
Yep.
I imagine your story is very similar to my story, maybe, as the son of an immigrant Italian who came out in the 50s because, you know, Italy was it was a poor country at that stage, and famine and all that. So parents came out to Australia looking for a better life. Is that the same for you, Dimmy?
Close. Yeah. Actually, I'm the one migrated from Cyprus.
It was you. Okay.
Yeah. I was just finished the army. I went to the army, Cyprus. It's a small island between Greece and Turkey. We speak Greek. And I'm a cabinet maker by trade. I started working since I was 11. I hated school. I can read English. I can't write English. I can't type emails. But anyway, so I finished the army. My business, my parents had a bad experience with the business. We had to go. We went broke, and they had $0 in our name. I pay for my whole family's tickets to come to Australia. Mum and dad, yeah. Two brothers and a sister. So we landed in Mascot Airport, 1989, knew no one person back there. It was just a letter from a sponsor. So I'll have a bed for them to sleep when they get here. And that's what it was. We met these people for the first time as soon as we landed in Australia. And day after, I got a job straight away. Actually, the first 3 weeks, I had three jobs.
This is in Sydney.
In Sydney.
Yeah.
And actually, the funny bit is, when we got here, the people that we knew, I would go and sign you in with the doll. Like, what is that?
The doll?
Yeah, the doll. That's what they call it there. And I was like, what is that? Like, oh, the government gives you money. It's like, why would the government want to give me money?
Yeah.
That's what we do here. Believe it or not, I was getting more money on the door if I was to apply than I was getting back home. And but being our nature, it's like, I'm not going to accept money from a third party. If I want money, I work for it. Yeah. Like we all knew. So our whole family actually I was the first one who got three jobs. My dad got a job for Qantas. My mom was the only one. My sister was still going to school. My other brother got a job as a cabinet maker as well. Actually, I'm a cabinet maker, and that's how it sort of all started. One of the jobs I get, Emo Theatre, kind of a family at the Emo Theatre in Newtown. I started helping and building stuff. The next thing I was, you know, ushering and then running the bars and, you know. And then I worked at a video shop and after hours, the renters, whatever we could do. So I lived there in Sydney for 8, 9 years. I've been a cabinet maker. And then age of 27, I was kind of... I actually drove up here with my ex-wife to Sunshine Coast and I loved it. And we moved up here. I got a job as a cabinet maker. And then our wages back then was $14 an hour. But in Sydney at the same time, we're on $30 an hour. So Sunshine Coast was so far behind. I loved the lifestyle of it. But I always had a passion for photography. So
didn't know that.
Yeah. So here you go. I always had a passion for photography. So I had my dad's camera, full manual camera, F5, a Nikon N5, nothing automatic. So I'd be using that for years. So I thought I'd do a course. It was a course in TAFE on the Sunshine Coast. It was a 2-year diploma. I started it within 6 months. I ended up publishing a magazine.
Did you?
Yep.
What was that?
A wakeboard magazine called Bora. I went national and international within the first 2 years. And then another one's called Kiteboarder. So I was the main photographer. I traveled around the world doing that. I quit cabinet making. I loved photography so much. It's like I was actually won awards in sports photography.
Do you still do photography?
Not as much as I wanted to. I still got all my gear, but I don't do much. I did a lot of stuff. I was the first person I went to a motocross event and I pulled apart a remote control car and I strapped it on a body armor of a motorcyclist and I used the tending device of the remote control car and it's actually triggering my camera was up in the air. That's when I got my first cover on a motocross magazine, actually went international. And that was 10 years before the remote control cameras came out. And it was so, I went to trying to paint it on that. It would have cost me hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so I was the first one actually did that in the whole planet. Yeah.
You know, I had no idea that you're so interested in such a keen photographer and the fact that then you traveled and won awards for your photography. Can you tell me about your drive? Because like I said at the start, you're someone that has so many balls in the air and you are invested and involved in so many different things. Where does that come from? Is that from your parents? Is that like a migrant thing?
Look, it's migrant.
When you land somewhere, you feel that, because I know my dad,
did
the same. He worked from the railway to cutting sugarcane by hand. And what's the driver for you?
Look, it is. We're obviously in Europe. That's all we know. It's no other way. We don't get. It's not such a thing winning the lotto or get money from someone or the government. So, our biggest drive is very, very simple. When I went to the army, that's two rules I learned. You're hungry, you cook. You want to be clean, you wash. There's no other way. Don't wait for your mum and dad or somebody else. Say, if I wanted to drive a good car, it's going to work for it. If I wanted a nice house, I've got to work for it. I bought my first push bike when I was 11, you know, because I wanted a push bike. And my first job, that was the first thing I did. I never got given anything from my parents. My parents never got given anything from their parents. So we all kind of learn, if you want something in life, you have to go and get it. Don't rely on anyone. Don't worry about certificates. Don't worry about I'm going to finish the uni and then once I got that certificate, I've got to do that. You got to do it all yourself. You got to be passionate about it. You have to have a drive. And everything I did, I build foundations. Cutting shortcuts, it would not work ever. You need to learn from the bottom of the ladder. Doesn't matter what you do.
Yeah.
And our generations now, they just want to go like a chef. No, I want to start cooking. You know, a bartender. No, I want to shake cocktails. A cabinet maker. No, I want to get on the drop saw. I had to sweep the factory for 2 years when I was 11, you know, before I touched the tool, you know what I mean? But then I got to know how the machinery works, how everybody else, you learn so much just from looking at it. And I've done it all in my life, even with my venues, every single screw, every single thing I built in our venues, anything from sparking to plumbing to you name it. And it's so important because something happens, something I know all about it. Like even a trader will come in, I know exactly what needs to be done. So I think that's the biggest thing. It's the drive, but we all immigrants learn that way. If you think about it, back in the war days, it's even the whole culture with food. When you're hungry, we used to, back in the war days, you can only eat what's in your backyard.
Yeah.
So you had to plan it.
So were you conscripted? Was that right? You had to. Yeah, I had to. Was it 18? You had to go.
17 into, actually. I was 17 in the army.
Yeah. And excuse my ignorance, but so not Greek, but
Cypriot.
Cypriot.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Cyprus. So we call it Cypriot. It's a different country altogether.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know.
Yeah. We're part of the Commonwealth. So Cyprus, it's the Turks used to have them, the Greeks, the Spanish, the English, they went through. Yeah. Actually, it's one of the most wanted military bases because we're right in the middle of the world, like right in the Middle East. And even still to this day in Middle East, all the planes go land in Cyprus.
Yeah, right.
And it's so, because we're not in, yeah, it's sort of protected, a bit an island. It's not as easy to, yeah. Yeah.
I can't even imagine what the conscription thing is like. I mean, I having a son and understanding that here in Australia, when young blokes were conscripted to go off to Vietnam, did it worry you as you were a teenager approaching the age of 17 that you had to go off and join the army?
No, because that's the thing. What you everybody had to did. Do, what everybody else did. And actually, you need to build yourself to be ready for the army. Yep. Do you know what I mean? Not just fit, but actually mentally and all that sort of stuff, and set your life, what are you going to do after, before the army? Because that's how life over there just split in half. It's life before army and life after army. So you've got to set up yourself, what are you going to do after army? But also you want to set yourself before army. So that's why I chose to work and save a lot of money. And then you're going to go, the army is not to show you how to shoot and kill people. If people, there's absolutely nothing.
That discipline?
Discipline is a big thing. Yep. It's very, very simple. You respect the above, and you go a long way.
Yeah.
And this is a simple rule in life. And
would you say that from all those years in the army set you up in terms of your entrepreneurial business skills
absolutely.
Now, in terms of
yeah,
the discipline and the... Yeah.
I mean, how many times? It's not just your boss, your manager, or... whatever's above you, you need to listen, you need to respect them, you need to learn from them, I suppose. But here's generation, we all know everything, you know what I mean? Or they all know everything. Is why should I do that? I'm not going to clean, you can't do that. And the thing is, you listen to them, you get rewarded, and that's how the army works. And everything is, every time you get rewarded, you get it on top of the ladder, and then the people are going to listen to you. So depends how disciplined you want to go, become a stronger personality as well. That you deal with problems in life. It's not, oh no, my phone is not working. What I do? Oh, I'm going to kill myself. Oh, you know what I mean? I'm sad. And we've got a lot of other things to worry about.
Puts everything into perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then anything on my mobile phone is broken. Big deal.
Or the Wi-Fi's out.
Was
the Soul Bar your first... kind of foray into hospitality?
Yes.
Yeah. And that's the one on Ocean Street?
That's correct.
Because there was a Soul Bar at Coolum.
Yes.
Were they connected?
No, as I was doing my photography and I had the magazine for 12 years, I went through a divorce, I suppose. I broke up with my wife at a time, and then
Can I just ask you about, do you mind if I ask you about this?
For it.
Because I recall, and again, back to your resilience and the ability to just get on with it. I recall an interview when you came into the ABC many, many years ago. You were living in a caravan or something like that. So you'd already achieved this level of success.
Absolutely.
And then...
Lost it all.
You started again. Yeah. And I always remember this story.
Yeah. So when obviously, you know, a bit typical government that took me to, she took me to cleaners. She, you know, she wasn't working. I don't want to say too much.
No, that's okay. But anyway, long story short, the resilience.
I lost everything.
Yeah.
And I had to start. I was living in the caravan for 2 years at Coventry. And you're thinking, that's not a big deal. I just start again. I do it again, sort of thing. So I had to rewind my business. I paid everyone. I paid all my debts. And yeah. I'd choose to sell everything, live in the caravan, then owe money to anyone. So all my bills were paid.
Yeah.
And everyone think, oh, you know, you live in the caravan. One of the best things that I've done in my life, again, is to start and it makes your life is more to, you know, to it. And I had my kids, and it was like, my son was 3 and my daughter was 6. They'll come and stay with me overnight. They get up to school. They go and play in the sand. They go to the beach. And, yeah. you know, and then I'll take them to school. They stay in the van with me. I didn't even have a tent. I just had a van. I didn't even have a non-power site. I wasn't living the luxury on holiday. Anyway.
But this didn't worry you? This was
Absolutely nothing.
Again, I always come back to the fact, you know, if you were conscripted and you spent those years in the army, then none of this is challenging to pick up the pieces and go on.
Look at any fight, you're like a boxer, you get punched in the head, you get dropped.
Like Rocket, yes.
What do? You can't just quit. You've got to give up and you've got to win the fight.
Yeah.
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 So anyway, after that, and obviously I was still, when I was winding the magazine down, and then I had a passion of, I always loved a lot of music, and you know, I was obviously single, and when I got to a few venues, I just wanted to listen to a lot of music, and it's actually the Sunshine, because back then it was really, really bad. It was not a lot of music, it was a couple of the pubs, they'll have cover songs, and it was issue with sound, and especially Malulba, they were shutting venues live right of sand. It's like, oh, there's more to life. You can't just, we were just living under, the government was controlling people, how we go and live. And I wasn't asking for much. I just want to go and have a drink and listen to live music. And I thought, you know what? No one's doing it. I'm trying to work with some people in Malulba. It's like, I mean, lose that fight, no one, you're never gonna get that live music.
What, because of the noise thing and the residential
and all the older people complain and just all the live music was literally got shut down. The only thing is, well, I was the Chef Club, they can go and just listen to a cover song. So I said, oh well, I'm not gonna wait for someone to do it. If I want it, the same thing is I'll just start something myself. So that's when we first started at Soba. So go back to Soba, Coolum. I used to go to Coolum until that got shut down.
Yeah.
As you know, so it was no live music. That was the only live music in the whole Sunshine Coast. Live, original, Touri, Triple J, and music was Coolum, and that was shut down because of the same thing, licensee issues and whatever. So 5 years after that, I got to know the guy on the Solba. And before that, I took a friend of mine, managed a band, and I took him to New York, and we did a tour there. And I went to a venue called Trash. And anyone from Bob Dylan to John Lennon, everyone played there, and it's still back to this day. And it's like, this is so amazing. Just walk in and we go and play there. And it's like, that's what I need to do on the Sunshine Coast, you know? I need to find something trashy, something away from everything else. It's like Brooklyn. And so when I come here, I went to that, what used to be an old strip club, and it was a rundown strip club, so you couldn't get worse. Bikes used to on it. It was all the middle of the day. Just you shoot a bullet or a shotgun, and you wouldn't hurt anyone. There was no just people pee in the middle of the street.
This is on the opposite side of where you ended up.
That's correct.
Yeah, I remember.
It was just a very, very run down. So I couldn't start any bottom of a bottom. Just to give you like a challenge. I love challenges. One thing to me, what I find is, no, you can't do that, or you can't be done.
Yeah.
And when I was speaking to people, I was like, no, don't be stupid. Osher Street, no, man, that's full of druggos, full of this, and, you know, homeless.
And this is long before the redevelopment too along there, wasn't it?
Yeah, but we created the redevelopment.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm saying yeah, long yeah, before it was a destination.
Oh, way, know, way before. There. Like I said, it was a rundown strip club.
Yeah.
So when that sort of closed the doors, so I went in and I was still living in the caravan park, and I had an agreement with the owner there. I said, look, you're going to close your doors. It's either handed to you and you lose everything, or made an agreement, give me the keys. He got the keys for a year. We sit down in a year's time. If you want it, you give me X amount of dollars and we keep it. If in June that year, if it doesn't work, I'm going to give the keys back anyway. So I approached 7 different people, to investors, because I had no money. Zero money to, and I still said, yes, we got to do it. All the investors that were laughing at me is like, live music, no one's into live music anymore. You in a hole there, no one's going to go to Ocean Street and this and that. It's like, it actually gave me more determined, like, and I just more drive, because all these people just saying, no, your idea is it's stupid, literally. I had a very good friend of mine at the time, Alex, which is my business time partner now, Alex Jones. He stood by me and he just believed what I wanted to do. And, you know, it's the same thing. He didn't have the financials, but he helped me mentally and helped me build what is Solba today. He's kind of a sound technician himself. So him and 20 other friends on Saturday night, 1 o'clock, we got handed in the keys from the strip club. 20 of us went in. On that Wednesday afternoon, we opened our first open mic night at the new Solba.
Oh, that's how you ran it, as an open mic night?
And open mic night to start with, the first night. And then we had bands booked on Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Yeah. Did you find there were a lot of artists that wanted to come and play?
Yeah, because it's such a short demand. It was like all this. Look, the Sunshine Coast is full of talent, all right? Even people moving from other states for that particular reason, but the talent is here. They had nowhere to showcase it. And then we thought that's a good start, is to get this open mind just to see what's out there, I suppose. And we had artists just lining up and just putting the name on the chalkboards to do. It was amazing. Until this day, open mic at Solba is one of our best nights. It hasn't got any backwards.
Yeah.
And a lot of artists come out of our open mic. That even Ziggy Albert now is, you know, is a rock star. He's an amazing guy. He used to be my glassy, and he was, I think, 14, 15 at a time, or 15, 16, something like that. And look at the stage, he never picked up a guitar. And the open mic, oh, we're going to pick up a guitar. So he learned how to play a guitar at Solba, and now he's, you know.
Yeah.
So that was that. And then 2 weeks into it, those 7 people approached me back.
they wanted in.
Yeah, yep. And as I said, I'm sorry, guys. Now it's I don't need your help now.
Yeah.
However, Alex, my mate, they helped me. He said to me, "Man, I want to be involved." So he went and put his mum's house on as a deposit. And because the worry that we had, the guy that I handed it was not contracts. I was shaking a group.
Just, handshake.
That's the Cypriot way. Yes. A piece of paper, he says, no, I'm not going to, what's a contract going to do? You know, so, so he was worrying about, like, you do know these that can come out of it, which is a could. So we managed to, he financed his house and got the funds and went and paid the guy out. So we sort of own the Solba, just me and him, sort of the outright. That was the beginning of Solba.
And then you ended up expanding. Did you take over the piano bar as well?
Yeah,
on
so
the end?
Across the road was the brewery, the old brewery there.
That's right.
I was a key bar. The key bar went broke, and then the brewery was about to go broke as well. And then was the pizza place across from us.
Yeah.
We went and said to them, you know, work with us, and we got all these people. No, we want people to come into our venues, not to yours. So I was buying the pizzas from the pizza joint and selling them. At Solba, we had to hit them up and, you know, have our own kitchen, that sort of stuff. And they got to a point where there was nothing left. And then people come in at 6 o'clock in the afternoon and we have to tap them on the shoulder at 3 o'clock and say, guys, you got to go home. So we figure we need a destination. We need people to come here. We need to go for dinner. And then me and my wife, actually my new, I met my wife the few days before I opened the Solba. And she was still my my partner, or my girlfriend at the time, went together and started piano bar. Piano bar, she's Italian, half Italian. And the same thing, it's we had no idea about kitchen, no idea about restaurants, and it can't be that hard. I actually got Tony Kelly to write my menu, and then when Tony Kelly, sort of was a few days before we opened, write the menu, and just see this look on my face, and he's like, oh, you're not happy with the menu. I said, man, it's amazing, but it's not Mediterranean. So what do you mean? I said, oh, do you mind I'm gonna show you? I was like, I'm just gonna do what I do. So he kind of took it on board and listened to me. He's like, hey, okay, easy. So we got a couple of my mum's recipes and with his stuff, and we turned a very, very rustic Mediterranean. And seriously, every week I ring my mum, what do you put on this? And just keep putting, it was her recipes.
Yeah.
My wife's new now, she's Italian. We ring her up and, you know,
yeah.
And that's how we kind of started. And we kept everything authentic. And it was kind of an older demographics as well, a bit of jazz music. So he couldn't, I mean, how can he go wrong? You know? So that was the piano bar. And one night, a piano bar Reeds development, I forgot his, what's his name, the guy owns Reeds.
It's not Harry, but the son.
The son.
I can't think of his name.
Anyway, so he was a piano bar. Having a drink, you know, had a few drinks, and we're just talking about, you know, we're talking about doing something with a big top.
Yes.
All right. What are you doing? Oh, we had all these plans. We're going to go up. We're going to go wide. We're going to go this and this. So, we're thinking of.
That was when they redeveloped it.
Yeah, before they redeveloped it. Said, all right, I'll come and talk to you on Monday. And he goes, it'll be awesome if we can have more of this on the street. So, so I went there on Monday because I don't like, if I know, I don't put anything off. I do it straight away. That's another thing I learned is if you're going to do it now. So when I saw him next on Monday and we want to redevelop, we want to do these, we have these restaurants. Okay, if you want to do that, let me be involved. Don't turn into another plaza and have all the chain restaurants and company, you're gonna ruin it. We want to call that, we have a hub that is all about culture. Who do you know? So I said, first thing is more than happy to move Solba, but you gotta build me. So he agreed. So he built me Solba as a live music venue, and he couldn't get anybody else to go on the strip. That's before they started developing agreement. I said, you know what, I'll take the one next to the Solba. And that's when I did Machu Picchu.
Oh, yeah.
To South America.
Yeah, yeah.
We got in a Brazilian chef. We flew into the country, wrote the menu. I don't know, it just worked again. It's, you know, so authenticity.
You just took the risks.
Yeah, I do a lot of risks, authenticity, just obviously for me, you've got to believe in something as well.
Yeah.
And you look around you, not because one Mexican restaurant is working, I'm going to open another Mexican. That's unfortunately, that's how a lot of people see it.
Yeah.
They don't see, if it's a builder, open a company on the sunshine, I want to be a builder as well.
Yeah.
There'll be 10 builders, there's going to be a gardener. That's how people are, instead of going and do something.
Well, I mentioned that I spoke to Tony Kelly last week on that podcast, and the thing I got from his, in terms of business acumen, is he kind of zigs when other people zag.
Yeah.
And it's about point of difference. If you're going to do that, or someone says, you're silly if you're going to do that, then that's the time to do it. Yeah. And that's what he's built his success on. You're involved in the hospitality arena, and then COVID comes along.
Yeah.
But understanding your resilience and your ability to rebuild after any kind of challenge, did that worry you, say, mid-year last year when we went into that 5-6 week lockdown?
When the COVID started, we started Diablo 4 years ago. Okay, so Diablo started getting a momentum and started becoming popular. The same thing. No idea how to brew or do anything else. So we did a Diablo ginger beer, and it's mass is very, very popular. So before COVID, I only had Diablo ginger beer and I had my vodka because we opened our rooftop bar.
Well, the alcohol I can understand because people drank more alcohol during the COVID thing.
But, so when everyone thinks, put hands up in the air, oh, we're going to die, you know, we're not going to go to business. I looked at it positive. I said, you know what? It could have, I lost at home for 2 days. I was like, I can't stay. I've got so much to do. So I went in and I created a whole range that we've got now, 7 liqueurs,
yep.
3 vodkas, and finally the Brodal Ramsar, because we sort of contract our distillery back then. So I created a whole new range, a whole new direction for our business, instead of sitting back and cry about it. So no, it didn't worry me. And that's what I was telling everyone. I said, you're just going to keep your head above water. And the strong man stands. That's a reality in life. Mm. You know what I mean? We all in the same boat. Don't, you know, what would you give up? Why would you shut your door? So again, we, you know, obviously the government was kind enough to give some incentives to pay our staff and, you know, keep the,
yeah,
the doors open and pay to the end. On the other end, we when everyone was sort of thinking how they're going to, you know, quit, and we started writing new menus, starting, you know, with our music, our venue, how we're going to go about it, and
yep,
go in and do some renovations, fix this, and it's we could see a light on the tunnel, on the end of the tunnel. So it's not if, it's when we've got to come out of this. Let's not wait and then do, yep, stuff. So when things, and we were ready, when sort of things started cleaning up a little bit, we were in the first venues that was like, this guy's ready to go. Mm-hmm. And that's, oh shit, we open up, maybe I go and clean up, or, you know, yep, get a new menu and that sort of stuff. And we had to think of different offerings. Well, how are we going to bring the people? You know, we again, we shut Solba before the announcement was done by the government the night before.
Mm.
We made a decision,
yeah,
it's not safe for our customers to keep trading.
Yeah,
we shut it, we announced it, and said, because of COVID, it's too dangerous. We knew something was going to happen, but we couldn't just keep going on because our staff. And at least 24 hours ahead of the government, we made a decision to shut Solba because of this COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in terms of the finance, without going into all the details, did you get, in terms of the lease and the, did the landlord give you a break on the, and then there was the JobKeeper thing. So you weren't concerned about cash flow and things like that?
Of course you're concerned. First thing I did, me and my business took ourselves out of the pay. We didn't get paid at all.
Yeah.
That was the first thing as a business. So everybody else got our staff, got pay, and whatever I need to do. So that was the first thing we did. All our landlords were great. Even Brendan Bryan with the rooftop bar was amazing. He sort of understood, and you know, you could see it long.
When did you open the rooftop bar?
We opened the rooftop bar 2 years ago. Yeah.
2019.
Yeah, and yeah, that's, you know, yeah, it was the first of its kind. But again, no one wanted to go at the top. We took the risk. It works. That's good. But one of my landlords, the one we got also, yeah, he was just I'm not going to call it what he was. And I was like, I don't care what you think. Here's the keys. Come and take it. I'm not giving in. I'm not going to give you pay. Oh, you have to. Not on.
Mm.
I'm paying my rent for 10 years, excuse me. I never missed a beat. Mm. And now when I need you, you're going to put I've got a knife in my... in me, and you're going to twist it. Stuff.
Well, the other question is then, if not you, who else would he get? Which is the...
Well, that's it. Yeah, which know, is so fine. Exactly what was, right. What but yeah, don't be like, yeah.
What's the future for the brewing side of your business now?
Look, we want to go nationally, internationally. I don't think it's an if, it's when. We're already getting requests. It's just a matter of time, I suppose. We're just about to launch on gin. It's a Mediterranean flavored gin. Again, never tried gin. I never distilled before, and I've got my own distillery now. And I thought I'd go and do something, and I wasn't even compared to anyone. I went to a venue down here, like a supplier down in Brisbane. They do a lot of Mediterranean food. So I've got, we call it herbs and spices. The gin people call it botanicals. So I've got around 20, 30. I just went to the shelf and I've got anything from Spain, France, Italy, you know, Greece, Albania, and just put it on the bench. And I started pulling it apart, smelling one at a time. And I said, oh, yeah, I can do something with that, put it on the side. And I think I ended up picking around 12. I cut them down. I thought, oh, I'll put this much. And I had my first recipe, a little bit of gin. And then I had to tweak it twice after that. So it didn't take me that long. And I got this amazing write-up from Bill Lack. Bill Lack is a godfather of a distillery in this country. He's from Tasmania. He was the first distiller. So I sent a bottle to another friend in Tasmania that he sent me, a really positive, amazing, but he thought Bill needs to try. He didn't tell me anything. The next thing I got a text from this guy, a known number. He's what I think you're gin, and this is Bill Lack. He's like, nah, it can't be Bill Lack. So I rang him. You know, people pay him money to actually, you know, I want to congratulate you. We haven't seen anything like it. It's not your typical gin. Mm. I just use what comes from my heart, you know, what yeah. it comes from home. I love my food. I love my flavors. And I thought, oh, I don't need to do what everybody else is doing. And when I was doing the same, oh, you got to put this. Oh, you can't do this. Like, and as again, gave me a drive, like, of course you can.
The point of difference.
You know?
Anybody yeah. listening to this that's, you know, of an entrepreneurial spirit or mind, what are two or three things that you would tell them?
Look, I mean, don't give up, I suppose. Passion is, it's going to be your number one. Don't do it for money. If you want to do business, you want to be in the business for a long time. Even if your business is going to be successful, you want to love it. If you don't, you're not going to last. It's the same thing when you get a job. You don't get a job because, well, you have to, but you're not going to last because you hated it. So it's the same thing. You need to be passionate, believe in yourself, and trying to see outside of the square. Don't do what everybody else is doing. Not because they're doing it, that means you got to do the same. Not because someone is not doing it, that can't be done either. So it's so many, you know, you can't reinvent. A lot of the time, it's not reinventing the wheel. You can't reinvent the wheel. It's just trying to create a different way so then other people are doing it. And there's always room for someone. People might hate your product, but trust me, some of them will love it. It'll be, especially, you know, the population is growing. It's always something, you know. Who knows, the vegan, having a vegan restaurant, people's going to succeed. You know what I mean? Like, but look at it, it's...
You're not a vegan, eh?
No, I'm not. No. Yeah, I'm just saying, you know what I mean? But I'm just saying, it's back 5 years ago, yeah, someone said to me, but look at now, how many vegans restaurant? The first person thought of it, wow.
Yeah.
You know, it's, yeah.
Thank you, Matt. I've really appreciated and love talking to you. And I know Deb says, you know, when she mentions your name, she says you're the hardest working man that she's ever, you know, worked with or come across. And I know that you're always ready, like your passion, you spoke about passion, always ready to help at one of our events or the magazine events, or, you know, we tried to catch up last week and you said, no, I can't do it Friday because I'm busy at the Festival of Surfing. And so you spread yourself everywhere. So I appreciate your story. Thank you, mate.
And you know, one of the things that you, like you said, is put your hands, get on your knees and work. Don't just point your fingers. Like everything my staff do, I can do. You know what I mean? And it's not a hero. I'm not trying to be a hero. I'm just got to show my staff that it can be done, you know? And I think they appreciate it a lot as well. Hey, my boss is on his knees cleaning the floors. I have to do it.
Yeah.
So, like you said, setting up the festival. Of course, I'm going to be there setting up the festivals. So, yeah. No, but thanks for your time. And
thank you, mate.
Yeah, no worries.
It'd be great.
Dimitri Limnatidi, he was my guest today on Everyone Has a Story. If you enjoyed that, if you listen to it via Apple Podcast or Wooshka or Stitcher, rate and review the pod. I'd really appreciate it. And if it's a great story that you think others should listen to, maybe a friend or members of the family, great story about resilience and getting back up, share it about on your social media networks. Until next time, take care.